This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. This isn't Tony Perkins. It's Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network. I'm sitting in again this Friday for Tony, who's traveling today. Always glad to do so and thankful for the opportunity to help bring important information to our Washington Watch listeners every day, and in my case, today, Friday. Well, it's upcoming. We're going to have hopefully a great 4th of July long weekend coming up here. So some of you may have to work on Monday, but hopefully most of us will have that day off on Tuesday to celebrate the freedoms that we have in this country. Well, today we've got some really interesting topics. I say that every time I'm on, right? But we do, because the things that Washington Watch covers are really important. They're important to you. They're important to your family. And so we appreciate you being here with us today to listen. Let me kind of give you a rundown of what's going to be happening. The first person that we hope to talk with is Congressman Jim Banks. He's been working on some legislation having to do with stem cell research. And, you know, I think probably many of you are at least somewhat familiar with that topic. It's a topic that has been miscommunicated badly by most of the mainstream media. They talk about stem cells, but they don't either they don't know or they don't understand or they're not willing to present the entire story, all of the information about this topic. There's this differentiation between what we call embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells. So I don't know if that's starting to stir up some memories in some of you in terms of things that you've read about or heard about. It is the adult stem cells that actually are effective in providing cures for various diseases or treatment, at least treatments to improve the progress of certain ailments. And so when you hear about a stem cell transplant, those are adult stem cells that they're talking about. And a lot of times they are the stem cells taken from the very patients themselves or from donors. And when you talk about embryonic stem cells, there's not been much progress. And those are the ones that require essentially creating, in some cases, a human embryo and then destroying that embryo in order to harvest the stem cells to do the research. And, you know, there's a bunch of controversy back in the George W. Bush administration about that whole thing, where there were some existing, what they referred to as existing stem cell lines. In other words, there were already some embryonic stem cells that had been harvested and they were still being used. And so the Bush administration came up with an approval for that, but said no more harvesting of human embryonic stem cells for the purpose of research. But it's the adult stem cells that are doing all the stuff. And I, quite frankly, haven't read much recently, but there were 60 or 70 different treatments, and this was several years back. So what we hope to talk with Congressman Banks about is his legislation that refers to that issue, as well as some things going on at the Veterans Administration. And then in the second segment, we're going to be talking, let's see here, let's pull it up, Chairman Bob Goodlatte, about Cates Law. And I think probably most of you have heard about Cates Law. Kate Steinle was the young woman who was walking along one evening, I believe, on the docks in San Francisco with her dad. And then all of a sudden, a shot rings out, and she is down. And I think the last thing she said to her dad before she died was, "Help me, Dad." And her father was on Capitol Hill talking about that and testifying for the passage. And it has been passed by the House. It goes to the Senate. And then there is another bill. It's called the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act. I think most of us have heard about it in terms of the Sanctuary Cities Bill, where these cities that have refused to cooperate with federal law enforcement and ICE, the immigration folks, to arrest these people. Some people call them illegal immigrants. I think that's an inaccurate term, and it's one that's sort of fallen into the lexicon recently. But it's illegal aliens or illegals, because, and you know, people talk about, well, they haven't committed any crimes. Let's keep folks in the country if they haven't committed any crimes. Well, folks, when you come here illegally, you have committed a crime. So illegal aliens. And so some of these cities, San Francisco is one, actually, I just mentioned, that that does this and essentially refuses to cooperate with federal law enforcement to detain, in some cases arrest, in some cases deport people who, A, have been here or are here because they crossed the border illegally or got here somehow illegally, or and or they have committed some kind of a crime, and so there's and they're still here somehow or another. So it was Kate Steinle was lost her life to an illegal alien who had been deported five times and who also had been convicted of seven felonies. Unconscionable. That is something that should have stopped a long time ago, and the previous administration did nothing about it. So here we are, 5 months into a new administration, and things are happening. And as you well know, just the discussion of actually enforcing immigration laws, from what I've read, has reduced border crossings in excess of 70%. So, you know, talking about building a wall, it sounds like just saying, hey, we're going to enforce the laws that are already on the books has had an amazing impact on what's going on. You know, we've been working to get Congressman Jim Banks on the line, and our folks are still working on that. And if we can't get him, we can't get him. But we will proceed nonetheless. But if we do grab him during this first segment, we'll put him on the air. So anyway, back to the second segment. Chairman Bob Goodlatte is going to be our guest. And you know, some important things are happening. Some good things are happening. You know, there's certain controversy about, well, if you have people who've been here for years and years, or they've had children here and that sort of thing, that's an you know, obviously part of this. But you know, right now we're talking about the folks that pretty much everybody should be in agreement should not be in the country. Those who are here illegally, number one, and number two, have committed some kind of a crime. In the last half of the program, what we're going to be talking about is an effort to reverse Roe versus Wade. And we're going to be talking with an attorney who worked with Norma McCorvey for about 12 years. If that name doesn't ring a bell, Norma McCorvey, who passed away, I think, a couple of years ago, within the last couple of years, she was Jane Roe, which was a pseudonym. She was the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. And once she met the Lord, and once she realized what kind of legacy she had left because of that case, she wanted to work to get that thing reversed, Roe versus Wade. And so the attorney we'll be talking with is Alan Parker. He's the president of the Justice Foundation. And we're going to be talking about the efforts that he's been working on, that he worked with Norma McCorvey to deal with this. He also represented Sandra Cano. She was the Mary Doe of Doe versus Bolton. And so he is working on that effort, and it's being ramped up. Obviously, the only way it's going to be overturned is if we have a Supreme Court that is willing to do that, to do just that. And, you know, I'm sure there will be, and there is, a hue and cry from the abortion crowd talking about all of the how awful that would be. But, you know, let's just remember for a minute. Let's think about what happens every time an abortion takes place. A woman walks into, let's say, Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in the country, 300-some-thousand plus every year abortions are committed at Planned Parenthood facilities. So two people walk in. One is in the womb. One is on foot. One person walks out. That's what happens every time an abortion takes place. So you know, people are going to be you're going to see a spiritual battle. It is a spiritual battle because what we're talking about is God's image, right? That's what we're talking about. We have an enemy who is relentless and does not like God's image, and that's really what abortion is all about. So Alan Parker is going to be our guest. We're also, if we have time, what we'll be doing is because he actually has some interest in this. There recently was a survey that came out that the Pew Research Center did. I'll just read a little bit about this, actually read from an article. This is from the Salt Lake Tribune. It was written by a Jennifer Rubin of the Washington Post, and it says the Pew Research Center's latest poll adds to the mound of evidence that there has been a sea change in public opinion about gay marriage, homosexual marriage, whatever you want to call it, same-sex marriage. By a margin of nearly 2-1, 62% to 32% more Americans now say they favor allowing gays and lesbians to marry than say that they are opposed. Views on same-sex marriage have shifted dramatically in recent years. As recently as 2010, more Americans, 48%, then favored 42% allowing gays and lesbians to marry legally. In the past year alone, support has increased 7 percentage points. So that, and it goes on further down here in the article, and she says, the degree to which white evangelical Christians' viewpoint has been marginalized is striking. So what this Jennifer Rubin is saying is, first of all, she's touting this Pew Research Center's poll. And let's assume that the poll is right. Let's assume for just a minute that it's maybe it's correct. You know, who cares? Who cares? You know, wrong is wrong, even if it becomes popular. You know, and it talks about in Scripture, it talks about, you know, right is going to be viewed as wrong. And wrong is going to be viewed as right. Good is going to be considered evil. Evil is going to be considered good. This is a perfect example of that. You know, so when you read that, that, you know, we as Christians are being marginalized, and it says white evangelical Christians, for goodness sake, there are evangelical Christians of every creed, every race, every color. So, when you hear that, when you hear that we're being marginalized because we think, because the fact that we think that marriage is between a man and a woman, you know, don't worry about it. We need to stand up for what's right, regardless of what the popular culture is saying. And that's what this article is contending. It's saying that, well, the views are shifting, and so it's just not cool anymore to say that same-sex marriage is wrong. Well, once again, I say I don't care what they're saying. And, you know, they're also in this article, it also talks about, well, let me just read the final paragraph. In sum, a large majority of Americans in a very short time have shifted their view drastically or dramatically in favor of accepting gay marriage. Religious minorities are free to disagree. Ooh, whoa, there's a slam right there. We're a religious minority. And some still do, but their claimed privilege to discriminate will not be one shared or even understood by a growing majority of their fellow Americans. Well, once again, who really cares what a growing majority of Americans think? If God doesn't think it's right, you know, we need to be on the right side of Scripture here. And that's, you know, that's what's going on. So if we have time in that last segment with Alan Parker, president of the Justice Foundation, we may chat about that a little bit. And we're also going to have an opportunity to take your calls to talk about either the reversal, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, or if we get into this topic that I've just discussed with regard to same-sex marriage and the popular culture and how, you know, we're being marginalized because we think marriage is between a man and a woman. Step back for just a minute and think about it. Marriage is between a man and a woman. Two guys on a cake is just not, it's odd, may I say it. It's just not a good thing. Anyway, we will be back. Unfortunately, we were not able to get a hold of Congressman Banks, but we'll be back in the next segment to talk about the stem cell, to talk about Kate's Law and the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act in our next segment. You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler here from Bot Radio Network, sitting in for Tony Perkins. FRC.org is one of the websites where you can find out more about Family Research Council. Tony's Twitter handle is at T Perkins. Mine is at Eben Fowler. That's E-B-E-N, Fowler. Well, two new immigration laws are on their way to the Senate. The House passed Kate's Law and the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act yesterday. With us now is Congressman Bob Goodlatte. He serves the 6th Congressional District of Virginia, and he's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Chairman, welcome back to Washington Watch, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Eben. It's great to be back with you and your listeners. Yes, yesterday was a good day for keeping America. Unfortunately, we've still got to get this bill passed through the United States Senate. The president is chopping at the bit. He is ready to sign this bill. He's made this a very high priority, but the Senate needs to take it up, and I hope they do, because it will make it easier for ICE agents, immigration and custom enforcement agents, to do their job by getting information and cooperation from local law enforcement agencies, most of which do cooperate, by the way, but you have a few hundred communities around the country, including some of the larger cities, where the city councils have actually instructed their local sheriffs and police chiefs to not respond to requests for information from ICE. Truly stunning to me, because it resulted in the deaths of a number of people. And Kate's Law is named for Kate Steinle, a beautiful young woman who was senselessly murdered by an illegal immigrant who had been deported from the country several times, kept coming back in. So what her law does is give judges the authority to greatly expand the amount of time that people can be incarcerated for entering the country illegally.
Well, you know, President Trump has said that one of the things that he wants to do in terms of a general policy in the country is to, it's under the Keep America X again, Keep America Safe again in this case. And, you know, do you have any sense for or any idea how many? You mentioned that a number of people have lost their lives to illegal aliens. Do you have any idea what the count is at this point?
I don't have a count. I can tell you that on Wednesday I was at the White House in the cabinet room, sitting at a table about wonderful people, all of whom had lost a family member to a crime by an illegal immigrant. And of course, it's not just murder and vehicular manslaughter. It also includes robberies and rape. Drug crimes and a whole host of other things. There are today, Evan, in the United States, approximately 300,000 convicted criminal aliens loose on our streets, primarily because the previous administration was extremely lax in terms of enforcing the law, and they released a lot of people. We're still learning more information, but allegedly, a young Muslim woman who was murdered in Northern Virginia by someone who was, we believe, an MS-13 gang member who had been released from ICE custody rather than deported outside the United States.
Wow. You know, and I was going to say that if the president and this administration did nothing else, if they accomplished nothing else besides doing these kinds of things to make Americans safe again, I would say that they were successful. There's an article in Fox News today that said it was a quote from a U.S. attorney for Utah, John W. Huber, who said that 40% of Utah's current felony caseload involves criminal alien prosecutions, and the number is increasing. That, to me, is unconscionable. Now, if you would, tell us, what does Kate's Law do?
Well, Kate's Law gives judges the authority to raise the amount of time they can imprison an illegal alien who has reentered the country illegally and committed crime from a two-year sentence today to up to 25 years. Now, they have discretion. It's not a mandatory sentence, and I think they should have discretion because in many instances you're going to want to send these people home to their home country
right,
for the expected return, particularly if they could face up to a 25-year sentence. But some people who have returned and have continued to commit crime, been deported, and return again to commit more crime, incarceration for a long period of time may not only be the thing to do to keep people safe from them, but also send that strong message to other people. Don't do this. Don't reenter the United States when you are not lawfully here. You've been sent out of the country and told not to return.
You know, it's kind of like that. I was going to say, I was going to ask you about the other bill, which is the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act. Tell us briefly what that's about, if you would.
So what this does is it strengthens the hand of the Congress and the Attorney General in the effort to get the communities to not instruct their law enforcement to not cooperate. And it simply says that if you do instruct your law enforcement that they cannot voluntarily cooperate with ICE, then we're going to cut off certain federal program funding for these communities. And they're all up in arms about this, but they're the very same communities where we see tragedies like what happened to Kate Steinle. And it also will give, and this I think could be a very powerful tool to get these communities to their senses, but it will give individuals who are harmed or the family members of individuals who are killed by illegal immigrants a private cause of action against the city if the city has a policy of instructing law enforcement to not cooperate. And as a result of that failure to cooperate, the illegal alien was loose on the streets of that community. Now, some of these communities are so far over the edge the other way that just the day before yesterday, we learned that the city of San Francisco is about ready to settle a lawsuit for $190,000 with a criminal alien who sued because the police department in San Francisco violated the sanctuary city policy and turned an individual over to the ICE agents for deportation.
Wow. Well, Chairman, we are out of time, and that's completely upside down. Thank you so much for your efforts here. We need to let our senators know that they need to vote in favor of both of these laws. So thanks again. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes here on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, you wouldn't know it by the markets yesterday, but we are getting some good news now. Of course, the bad news is what is not going on in Washington, D.C. in the legislative process. And that is going to continue to be bad news as it eats away at the time left to get any kind of tax reform done. Mnuchin, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, is indicating that tax reform will be done this year. He did not say that it would be retroactive for this year, just that it would get done this year. And I guess that's better than nothing. It would be great if it was retroactive to this year. It would give a great jump start for next year's economy. But nonetheless, we'll have to wait and see. And it's not looking real good. I'm not sure why President Trump is not traveling about the country doing rallies about healthcare reform and tax reform and speeches in reference to those things. But be that as it may, we are getting some positive news in the economy. First of all, the first quarter GDP has been upgraded to 1.4%, and that's very good news. That's a little bit higher than expectations. The U.S. economy didn't perform all that badly for the first 3 months of 2017, and it is growing right now twice as fast as the government originally reported. That is the final GDP number. Consumer income up 0.4%. Consumer spending up 0.1%. U.S. savings rate up to 5.5% from 5.1%. And disposable income leaps to 0.6%. So that's the highest since 2012. All of that should be a catalyst of good news to drive the markets a bit higher this week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
We're back on Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Glad to be here and looking forward to a great 4th of July weekend, and hope you all have some great plans going. We're going to have some family coming in, and we're looking forward to it. All right, we've got a really important segment coming up here, and we're going to stay with our next guest through the balance of the hour, and we're also going to have an opportunity, hopefully, if we have a little bit of time, to ask you to call in and participate in the broadcast today. Let me give you that number now so you can jot it down, and we'll give it to you again after the break at 42 after the hour. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234 is how you get on the line here. So jot that down and make some notes if you've got a question you want to talk about these topics that we're about ready to dig into. Really, really important. Okay, there's a growing movement to overturn Roe versus Wade, which is one of the worst decisions the Supreme Court has ever made in its history, in my view, and I think in the view of many others. It's a horrible, horrible decision. Various spiritual and pro-life leaders have begun what's called the moral outcry, a move to petition the high court to recognize the crime against humanity that abortion is. With us now is Alan Parker. He served as the lead legal counsel for Norma McCorvey, who was Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade, as well as Sandra Cano, who was Mary Doe of Doe versus Bolton, in the legal effort to overturn that landmark Supreme Court ruling. Those two, both of them actually, Roe versus Wade, Doe versus Bolton, that brought legalized abortion on demand in America. In my view, it's a holocaust. There have been 55 million plus God-created human beings whose lives have been lost because of that law. Alan, thanks for joining us on Washington Watch today.
Thank you, Evan. It's great to be with you.
All right. Well, we're going to have about a half an hour here and have an opportunity to communicate, to give our listeners a little bit of the history. And then we're going to talk about the efforts going forward to overturn this heinous law, this thing called Roe versus Wade. And you're the perfect person to talk about it because you knew Norma McCorvey and worked with her for a number of years, as I understand, about 12 years. You also knew Sandra Cano, and that's a name that actually, quite frankly, I was not that familiar with. Certainly have heard of the Doe versus Bolton ruling. Let's start out, first of all, give us sort of a thumbnail sketch of what Roe versus Wade did and then what Doe versus Bolton did.
Well, in 1973, Roe v. Wade created a right to abortion and appeared to create a kind of a trimester framework for no restrictions on abortion in the first trimester, some protections to protect the woman in the second trimester, and even some protections for the unborn child, though the court called him a fetus at that time, in the third trimester. But it said, but see Doe v. Bolton. And Doe v. Bolton, which was Sandra's case, created the health exception to Roe v. Wade, which meant that if a woman for any reason claimed that she needed an abortion up to the moment of birth, she could get it. Because after all, mental health includes psychological well-being, and if you would say you wouldn't be happy having a baby, then your health would be affected, thus you would allow abortions up to the moment of birth.
Well, we had an abortionist in the state of Kansas, Dr. Tiller, who committed abortions up to very, very, very late. In fact, he may have even been doing partial birth abortions. I don't recall the history that well. He had another doctor because in the state of Kansas, you had to have another physician, a second physician, sign off when you were going to have one of these real late-term abortions. And that was pretty much the excuse that this so-called other doctor or this other so-called doctor used was this Doe versus Bolton thing. Thank you, by the way, for clarifying what that decision did. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that essentially created a huge barn door that a Mack truck could drive through in terms of an exception, didn't it?
Yes. One of the things that evil uses to advance these causes is by taking very hard and difficult cases and calling them things like therapeutic abortion, meaning for your own good and your own health. And there are some cases that are very difficult, but then there's no safeguards that only those cases or extreme cases would be used, and it becomes a wide open door through which any woman can get an abortion.
Absolutely. Well, I'm talking with Alan Parker. He's the president of the Justice Foundation. We're talking about the effort to overturn Roe versus Wade. Tell us a little bit about Norma McCorvey, and because you knew her, you worked with her for a number of years. And as I understand, what you're working on was an attempt to overturn this decision. Tell us about Norma. What was she like, and what was her heart? What was it she was trying to do?
Well, both Norma, who was the Roe of Roe v. Wade, and Sandra, who was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, its companion case. The two were decided on the same day, treated together. They're the two cases that laid abortion framework. Both of them filed motions with the U.S. Supreme Court to reject their own cases and to reverse them. But they did it alone. And so this moral outcry project is asking millions of America to join us in a petition to the Supreme Court to reverse the two crimes that both of those women came to believe were actually crimes against humanity. Both of them felt responsible for the death of millions of human beings. Both of them became strong Christians, but every year, for example, around the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, Norma would go through great depression, thinking another million babies have died because
Alan,
of me.
I'm going to jump in here. We're coming up to a break, but we're going to give you lots of time to tell our listeners about the moral outcry and how they can get involved right here on Washington Watch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to be going back to Israel in March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love to have you come with us. You know, one of my favorite places to go in Jerusalem is Gordon's Calvary, which is the place where they make the case, a very strong case, was where Jesus was executed. Then we'll also see the Garden Tomb, which is right next door to that, where also a very strong case can be made, was the tomb where Jesus was buried and where he rose from the dead. Well, that's just two of the places we'll see on one day in Jerusalem. We'd love to have you come with us. If you want the information we have available on the tour, go to the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com. For a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
We at American Family Association are committed to making a difference and keeping you informed about the things you care about. We have already been greatly successful in bringing about change for the better by providing you with important information about things like current legislation and petitions that can affect your family. Text the word MYAFA to 41411 to get involved. Every week, you'll receive text messages with all the details you need to help make a difference for the kingdom. Text MYAFA, that's all one word, to 41411.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Listening to Washington Watch, Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony today. FRC.org is the website, the Twitter account for Tony, at T. Perkins. I'm kind of new at the Twitter. Mine is at Eben Fowler. If you want to send me a shout out, I'll get back to you. Well, we're talking with Alan Parker. Alan's an attorney. He's the president of the Justice Foundation. What we're talking about is an effort to overturn Roe versus Wade, something that should have happened a long time ago, but it's not easy. It's not easy. Alan, you were telling us about what has happened every year, what did happen often every year on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade with Norma McCorvey before the break. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes. She and Sandra both felt terrible every year on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade because another million children were killed. And now this is an opportunity for every American who feels like they did, that abortion is the killing of a human being and therefore a crime against humanity, that they can go to themoraloutcry.com, themoraloutcry.com, and sign a petition to the United States Supreme Court itself, asking them to reverse these crimes against humanity, which would be the two cases we've talked about, Roe and Doe, and the 1992 decision of Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which did weaken Roe v. Wade, but still kept that right to abortion with some restrictions. We are now allowed to have some restrictions, but last year the Supreme Court struck down even common sense restrictions for the protection of women. And so there needs to be a way. If you're a person who says, I grieve every time a child is killed, I grieve that there's almost a million a year being killed. You can tell the Supreme Court, please reverse this crime against humanity. And in the petition we say, it's as grave an injustice as Dred Scott, which denied legal protection to a class of human beings. It's as grave an injustice as Plessy versus Ferguson, which withdrew legal protection from a class of human beings. And a crime against humanity is when the government, which the Supreme Court is part of our government, when the government withdraws legal protection from a class of human beings resulted in their severe deprivation, up to and including death, which is what abortion is, that's a crime against humanity. And now everyone can register their severe protest and severe criticism in a way that is peaceful. It honors those in authority, because the reason we're doing it to the petition is to the Supreme Court is because they created this problem. It wasn't the legislature. It wasn't Congress that created the problem. If it was, we would petition them. And just like they did in Brown v. Board of Education, when they corrected a 58-year-old precedent, we're asking them to correct their 44-year-old precedent. And it's time. It's time. And anyone can sign the petition and then become part of an army of justice seekers and share the petition with other people so that we get millions of people on record in the U.S. Supreme Court document saying, please reverse this crime against humanity.
Alan, give us that website one more time, and we'll be repeating it at least another time after that. It's themoraloutcry.com?
Com.
.com. All right. Yes. Yeah, let's get that right. Themoraloutcry.com. You know, there may be some folks who are listening who say, you know, I'm tired of hearing you people talk about abortion, but you know what? If you just step back and realize what it is, you know, it's a direct assault on God's creation, on his image, by the enemy of our soul. This is not something that we should become lax about. Unfortunately, I think many of us just we've gotten so used to it as being just part of the, unfortunately, the fabric of our culture. You know, Roe v. Wade just sort of rolls off the tongue. But when you realize, if you just kind of take it right down to the individual level and understand what's happening, this is something that really all of us need to be involved in some way. And, you know, going to a website and signing a petition is no big deal. TheMoralOutcry.com. And I was going to ask you, you know, there are lots of petitions out there that people ask you to sign. But there is actual constitutional precedent or constitutional opportunity to petition directly the Supreme Court. Now, you kind of mentioned it, but go into that just a little bit more.
All right. Like I say, what we're asking the Supreme Court to do is to exercise their discretionary power under the writ of certiorari to take a case that would be appropriate in which to reverse Roe, Doe, and Casey. But when people may remember when Judge Gorsuch was nominated, there was a lot of talk about, is Roe v. Wade precedent or not? Is it a super precedent? And that was Dianne Feinstein's question, mm-hmm. I believe, to Neil Gorsuch. And he said, yes, it's a precedent. But so was Plessy versus Ferguson, which said segregation was legal. And many people had come to rely on that. Well, Neil Gorsuch is one of the co-authors of a book on the law of judicial precedent that came out in 2016. And it has a foreword by Justice Stephen Breyer, another member of the Supreme Court. And I'm going to quote exactly from the law of judicial precedent on reasons for overruling a case. And Section 47D says, the decision has been met general dissatisfaction, protest, or severe criticism. And that certainly describes Roe v. Wade, doesn't it? It's still the most controversial decision in American history.
Absolutely.
And the election turned upon it. Even today, the nomination of Supreme Court justices turns on their position on this issue many times.
That's right.
And this petition allows it. to be honest, this is a little bit of a severe criticism. I'm a member of the bar of the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm a former professor of law. In a way, it's a bit of a step to go out for me and to say the Supreme Court is committing crimes against humanity. But that's what it is. And I say it in all respect and humility, with a desire for them to change their mind, but we need millions of people saying it with us.
That's right. Alan, let me just jump in here, and I want to put our phone number out. I'd like you to call and tell us what your thoughts are about overturning Roe versus Wade. The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We'll try to get your call on here in just a minute. Well, Alan, let me have you talk a little bit more about, but one of the questions actually that I have for you is, you'd mentioned Justice Neil Gorsuch, and it seems that there may be one or maybe more than one additional justices who are going to have to be replaced in the near future. In fact, there have been rumors that Kennedy might decide to retire, and I don't think he's the oldest among the group there. Is that part of why things might be turning? We might be getting into a situation where the overturn of Roe versus Wade might be possible.
Yes, absolutely. Justice Gorsuch wrote a book on how on euthanasia and assisted suicide, and said all life is precious and deserves legal protection under the law. And then I agree with you. I think we're going to have at least two members more of the Supreme Court die or resign within the next year or two. Justice Ginsburg is one of the oldest members at 83, and she has had poor health in the past. And in her own mind, she would not want to resign probably while Donald Trump is president, but she doesn't control when she lives or dies. That's in the hands of a higher power and a higher court even than her own.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, you know, you would think that a Supreme Court justice shouldn't necessarily be defined by whether they're liberal or conservative, because judges are supposed to be independent. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. That's just the way it is, because, you know, you hear this talk about the balance of the court. I'm not sure that that was necessarily ever the intent of the founders. What do you think?
No, the founders intended for judges to take an oath to defend this written constitution. They were supposed to follow the intent of the ratifiers of the constitution. That's where we get the legitimacy of our government, from the consent of the governed. But I don't know that I'd call it liberal, but it is liberal, or the living constitution theory means that the words in the constitution mean what the judges say they mean, not what they meant at the time of ratification of the Constitution. And if the words mean what the judges say, the liberal view, you have they call it a living document, but it really is a document by men, and it's an oligarchy. A few men, five men or women, can decide what the law is, as they did with marriage about 2 years ago. There's no constitutional right to gay marriage, in the Constitution. They made it up out of whole cloth. That's why it wasn't 9-0. It was split 5-4 between judges who just follow the written document and its understanding the way it was when it was adopted. The Constitution is supposed to be a living document through the amendment process, where the people give legitimacy to the rulings by changing the Constitution. Women's vote was done that way, for example. No one talks about eliminating women's right to vote, because it's in the written Constitution now. There's a lot of talk about eliminating women's right to abortion, because it's not in the Constitution. It can be overturned by five judges saying, under the law of precedent, it's been severely criticized. And in addition, our petition points out another thing that's brand new, and a change in law can also overrule precedent. There are over 200 Supreme Court decisions which have been overturned by the Supreme Court. And one of the arguments is a change in law. And one of the things I want to point out is that no woman has to take care of a child if she doesn't want to in America anymore. All 50 states have a safe haven law where you can transfer responsibility for your child to the government, at no questions within a reasonable time after birth, no questions asked, no legal procedure, just drop them off at a safe place like a hospital or fire station, no questions asked, and you can walk out of the hospital and leave the child behind. So most women get abortions because they don't want to take care of the child. Legally, they can now not kill the child, not injure themselves, and be free of the responsibility. And I mentioned the injury to women. I represent over 4,500 women hurt by abortion. They've given us legally admissible written documents about how terrible either the physical or the emotional trauma of taking the life of their own child was in their lives. So we can stop hurting women and help them.
Talking with Alan Parker, president of the Justice Foundation, and what we're talking about is an effort to overturn Roe versus Wade. It's a petition that you can participate in. It's called The Moral Outcry, and the website is themoraloutcry.com, themoraloutcry.com. And I would encourage you tonight to sit down at your computer, get on your smartphone, and go and read about that and participate in it, because how many signatures are you looking for, and at what point do you think it's going to be effective, and do you think the Supreme Court's going to pay attention to this petition?
That's a bunch of questions. I think we're shooting for well over 1 million. I'd like to see 5 million, and I do believe it will be very effective. I believe that we're actually seeing God intervened in American history again through the election of Donald Trump and the change on the Supreme Court that we are going to see and we are seeing. I believe with all my heart that God hates abortion and he wants to bring an end to it. And in the fullness of time, I believe we're going to see that. So I believe with all my heart that this petition is going to be part of it. But it'll take all of us rising up to help do it.
That's right.
We're a nonprofit legal foundation. We're not charging anyone for our legal services, but we can't do it alone. And Norma and Sandra couldn't do it alone. It's got to take a large population segment, but to have this would be unprecedented in American history if we get over a million signatures on a direct petition to the United States Supreme Court.
And we're going to do that. Alan Parker, our guest. Alan, we're going to take a call here. I'm talking with Eugene in Arkansas. Eugene, we just have a couple of minutes, so just a quick comment or question, if you would.
Yes. My comment, I wanted to remind all the listeners out there, and, of course, I appreciate this show, the father of our country, George Washington, made this comment while he was in his presidency, the first presidency, and he said, "It is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Holy Bible." And so our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and basically our government as a whole was set up on biblical principles. And I think it's important for the justices, especially at the Supreme Court level, but also at the federal judges at the state level, should be honoring what the Constitution says and not trying to legislate law. They're creating laws, and that's not their job. And I think that federal judges should be punished and hopefully fired for betraying their oath to do that.
Well, Eugene, thanks very much for calling today. Sorry I had to kind of drop you off there. We're at the end of the broadcast. Alan Parker, thanks very much. Let me give you that address, that web address, themoraloutcry.com, themoraloutcry.com. Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Thanks for listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
372-7234.